chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for joining us, and I'm glad to be back. Missed you all Monday. Had some unfortunate circumstances arise. Went up to the snow and had a little mishap with my wrist. Anyway, long story short, had to skip out on the show Monday, but we're back and we're not going to be missing anymore for a while now. And, you know, during the holidays, you never know. But either way, make sure you keep up with us on YouTube because all of our shows are archived there on YouTube, on UCY TV YouTube channel, and you can watch or listen to all the stuff that we've talked about over the last few years. Me and DB have been going at it for a while now, man, covering all of these events worldwide, local, national, you name it. Anyway, DB, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right, I guess, man. But that was the first time I actually put myself through a debate for last night, the Republican debate. And God, was that just a fucking matrix ass clusterfuck.
I'm sorry, man. I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm fortunate enough to not have watched it. But I did post an article that Jake wrote during the last debate, again last night, called Five Things You Can Do Instead of Watching the Debate, which is a rather hilarious article. But we're also joined by Jake tonight on the call. What's up, Jake?
Hey, man. Doing good. Glad to be back with you. Glad your wrist injury is all right. Kind of a little suspicious.
I didn't punch anyone. It wasn't right. It wasn't any kind of inside job. I mean,
yeah.
Rest assured.
I'm with DB, and I'm sure you and everyone else that you know, I had a delicious lentil soup for dinner tonight. Unfortunately, I was eating it while watching Lawrence O'Donnell's MSNBC replay of the debate, and I almost threw up. Even though it was a delicious soup, but boy, just their replay of points about the carpet bombing and who's a bigger war tyrant is just so despicably transparently vacuous that it's hard to watch. I agree with you, DB, man. It's hard to watch.
And you know what, Nick, our boy Rubio, I think he did himself in on that one. I think maybe we didn't really understand the depth of the incompetence of this asshat.
Oh man, if we weren't sure that he was a warmonger before last night and just a surveillance hawk or whatever, man,
right. I mean,
you name it, any horrible government program, Rubio is like all for it, which is why he has the support of the establishment, man. All the billionaire backers Sheldon Adelson, which is one of the largest single Republican financiers, is backing Rubio. I mean, he is the establishment pick. He may not wind up being the nominee. I hope that he's not. But I mean, he is the guy the establishment wants. They know that Bush is unelectable just because he's a Bush. You know, we all know about Trump. You know, Cruz is too extreme, I think, for the establishment even. They want Rubio, you know, and as hawkish as he is, Trump really does make him seem like a moderate, you know?
So, Nick, you didn't like Rubio's little eulogy to the metadata program that was so touching?
I actually, no, you know what, I missed it.
Oh, you did? That's right, you didn't see it. DB, you heard that, right, when he was talking about, if that tool had been at our disposal, we might have, you know, something, whatever, he was blathering about the metadata program.
Yeah, and I loved his, you know, connection to RICO and the mob and how they've been listening to us since the 60s at least. You know, yeah, they have, but with a warrant. And they were listening to people that were involved in organized crime. Right. And they weren't just listening to people for, you know, whatever they're going to use blackmail later.
Sad times, man.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I think you got Trump running with Cruz now, and they're going to sabotage.
That's what I think. I placed yet another bet on this, this time with my father last night. I bet $50 that Trump would be the nominee. He still, for some reason, doesn't think it's going to happen, and I'm just saying it. And I think it should be transparent. Yeah. Should be transparent now from you know, his answer to the question of whether he would run as an independent, and he said finally, no, I will not run as an independent. Now, he could backtrack from that very easily, but it's very clear now that there is a kind of synthesis going on, a symbiosis going on, where the GOP is changing and Trump is just kind of taking over, and I think it's going to be Trump-Cruz.
It's pretty crazy, man. It seems to me like they're trying to see what they can get away with here as far as making the most extreme to the right candidates they can throw in there. And then by default, it makes even Hillary look somewhat sane. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't think they can lose, man. They either have a completely insane fascist, a banking cartel insider in Hillary,
no,
or you actually have Bernie really military industrial complex guy, because yeah, his social policies are progressive and by far he's the best choice, but he's still going to continue and probably even expand the wars.
Right. I thought by lose you were talking about the GOP. I still think Hillary will win. I think Hillary will mop the floor with Trump in a debate.
Definitely. I mean, even if you look at the polling numbers head to head, Trump versus Hillary, Hillary wins by a good amount. And the only candidate that has actually shown the ability to beat Hillary is Rubio, you know, and that's another reason why the establishment wants Rubio. Not only is he in their pocket with the military industrial complex, you know, this is a guy that's more than willing to start World War III or at least start a regional war with Russia. But he's also the most electable guy. You know, he's a Latino. He speaks Spanish. The fastest growing the fastest growing demographic in the United States is the Spanish speaking demographic, you know, and so he's a perfect candidate to try to broaden out the Republican base, and that's why they want him so bad. But unfortunately, I think the establishment underestimated the extremeness of their own base, and they didn't think that these guys were going to latch onto Trump in the way they did, but they have. And it doesn't really seem like they're going to let go of Trump. And it does seem like Trump may end up being the nominee, which is going to basically directly hand it off to Hillary, which is basically the same as electing Rubio. Rubio and Hillary more or less have the same exact platform, except, you know, Rubio is quote-unquote conservative on social issues and Hillary is quote-unquote liberal on social issues. But when it comes to foreign policy, surveillance, all that stuff, they're very hawkish and Hillary has even more to prove, I think, than Rubio, and she would be, I think, even more hawkish in the Middle East. What's his name? Cruz actually made some comments a couple days before the debate. It was Trump. Trump actually said that Hillary Clinton was responsible for a couple hundred thousand deaths in the Middle East, and he's actually right. You know, and it's not very often that Trump is actually correct on things, but on that, he was, man. Hillary Clinton really is responsible for a lot of deaths. I mean, Libya, many people have called Libya Hillary's war. She was very much responsible. She was the main cheerleader for that war. She really helped put the propaganda out there to support that. we all kind of seen what happened with Libya. Now, you know, you got 50 to 100,000 people dead. You got a failed state. You got like 10 different warring factions in a civil war with no sight and end, no end in sight. You got the U.S. still doing drone strikes out there. Apparently, there was just a story last month about how we supposedly hit one of Al Qaeda's, you know, leaders in Libya. It's like, damn, I didn't even know we were still bombing in that country. And then it turned out, oh no, we missed him. But yeah, we're still bombing in Libya. You know, we that was in back in what 2001, I think it was, when we went and overthrew that country. And you know, look at us now, almost 5 years later. We're still bombing that country, you know, and with no end in sight, you know, who knows how long it's going to continue. And so that's Hillary Clinton. That's on Hillary Clinton's back. And you know, she's got to carry that. You know, I don't know how many of the candidates would actually challenge her on that kind of stuff. I think Cruz, as crazy as he sounded, you know, he actually made a good point on the fact that we need to stop overthrowing countries in the Middle East. And in fact, Cruz said that we shouldn't have overthrown Gaddafi. And he's right. You know, and because, you know, we see what happens when we do those kind of things. Now look at the other thing about Libya. Now ISIS has a branch there. They have their own. They've already taken over a whole city. You know, so ISIS has a beachhead in Libya now, too. And that's all because of U.S. foreign policy. We were the main factor in overthrowing that government. Yeah, it was like a NATO operation, but it was mostly U.S. operations that took place. So, you know, that's horrible. We also have Claire Bernish on the call tonight. First time joining us, not in the studio. How's it going, Claire?
I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome.
I think.
Hey, Claire.
Hi, how are you?
So, you know, it's really not a coincidence that all these GOP candidates are out there sounding like super hawkish. And Claire, there's actually a few articles of yours that went up this week that I want to talk about because they're all pretty relevant for the discussion tonight. The first one is about this military-industrial complex lobbying group, and ironically, their name is the name of this group is Americans for Peace, Prosperity, and Security, and the abbreviation is APPS. And I guess it's ironic because it's the first three words is Americans for Peace, but the main function of this group is to spread war all around the world. And in fact, they were bragging about the fact of how much over the amount of influence they have over a lot of these candidates out there right now. And they've named off a bunch of the GOP guys. So, Claire, I want to talk about this article first because, you know, this money flowing in from all these contracting industries, and we all know it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. In fact, over since 9/11, the argument could be made that these industries have probably profited or at least grossed in the trillions of dollars between the whole bunch of them. But this was originally reported by The Intercept, but it shows that there's a huge lobby going on just to spread this rhetoric out there in the candidates to kind of build support for these wars in a propaganda sense without even having to, you know, have commercials or pay anybody to pull off any kind of attacks or any weird things like that. They kind of just use these candidates to spread this war propaganda. And I know it went on all kinds in the 2012 elections, in the Republican primaries against Iran. That was the threat back then. Of course, now it's ISIS and the entire Middle Eastern region. Claire, what can you tell us about this group?
Well, you know, just like any other kind of government program, I would say, because it's not really, it's obviously it's not a government group, but it's made up of, you know, former politicians and military types and such. But just like any government program, it is kind of aptly named because, you know, whenever it says something like peace, Americans for Peace, then you know it's really something like the opposite of that. And basically they are ensuring that war will be perpetual. They're praising these presidential candidates for basically promising to make sure that the American engagement is really strong worldwide. You know, these things that are, they're really, it's more than transparent. They're basically saying, we want to make sure that the military-industrial complex continues to profit off of this continued wars everywhere in the world, no matter what. And we're talking about contracting. I just finished watching Brave New Films, that film tonight called Iraq for Sale. And it talks all about, say, Halliburton and how Halliburton overcharged by, like, billions of dollars on just insane things, contracting, just for profit. And this group reminds me so much of that, that everything is about profit in war. And this proves it. They're only promoting candidates who are willing to basically say America will have a strong presence everywhere in the world, as if we don't already. So, I mean, that's what this comes down to.
More or less, yeah. And, you know, all these candidates are in the pocket. Rubio has spoken at their events. Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, Lindsey Graham, Ben Carson, you know, all the characters out there that were supposedly looking to represent the people of the United States. Unfortunately,
yeah,
they've
like,
got... Go ahead.
Like Lindsey Graham said, I just have to say this one thing. Lindsey Graham said, I am sick and tired of hearing people on my side avoid the idea of an American ground component. It's like, well, okay, why? You know, pop it. I mean, that they're all parroting the same thing. They're all saying it in their own ways. They're trying to make it as if it's like a patriotic duty to put troops on the ground everywhere in the world, but really it has nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Because
let's draft Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, draft Lindsey Graham, and let's drop him out of one of these planes and use him as a bomb, you know? I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, he'd cause a little crater.
I would love that. I hate him more than any person.
Lindsey Graham is one of the worst. Him and John McCain, I mean.
No, Graham was the one, he literally said during the debate, I miss George W. Bush.
He did say that.
I mean, good God. I mean, I can't think of a more hyperbolically demented statement than I miss George W. Bush in the White House.
So
wasn't he also the one that said he wanted to make sweet love to the new bust of Dick Cheney?
He was at least thinking it.
You said you were eating Wendell soup and that you almost threw up. And I mean, I just don't know how you didn't throw up after hearing that comment about him.
Nick, I did throw up.
Yeah, well, you know, lentils coming up the nose, man, that's some painful stuff.
I'm kidding. It was a delicious soup. I didn't throw up. Anyway, back to Claire's article.
So the main thing here, it's not like these candidates are just like getting intelligence from their connections, or they're just spontaneously coming to these conclusions that, oh yeah, we need to just go start invading the Middle East and, you know, put ground forces in there. That's not the case. I mean, they're actually being lobbied specifically to push for these ideas in these debates, and whether or not they're elected, that doesn't really matter. What all this group cares about, Americans for Peace, Prosperity, and Security, all they care about is spreading our wars out overseas and making them continue as long as possible. And now we got to keep in mind, who are these groups made up of? Well, they're made up of all the military contractors, the guys that make the missiles, the guys that make the bombs, the guys that make the jets. So, you know, it's in their interest to continue these wars overseas and keep them going as long as possible. And as twisted and demented as that sounds, you know, it's business, man. Business is business. They need to make profits. Well, their profits come from killing people, you know?
And you know, like, even on there's a page on their website that is the historical perspective. And even there, I mean, sometimes it's a little bit more subtle than it is obvious, I guess, to some people maybe. But even on their historical perspective page, it says, history has shown that American presidencies are often defined by foreign crises. I mean, you know, they're basically saying this is how it is. And, you know, you heard, I can't remember who it was in the debate, said, whoever comes into office is coming in during wartime. They're going to be a wartime president. It's like, well, when are they not a wartime president anymore?
It sounds like a Project for New American Century. In fact, if this was the SATs, I would say Project for New American Century is to Al-Qaeda what that group is to ISIS.
I'd agree with that.
Pretty much. And they also kind of have a subtle little tag against Muslims on their website as well, referencing Thomas Jefferson's involvement in the Barbary War, which anyone who's a student of history would know that that was the early war between the U.S. and like more or less Muslim pirates back in the day that were attacking the shipping routes going through, I think, the Mediterranean, and they kind of reference that on their website in a way that's kind of like, look, we've been at war with Islam forever, so let's just keep it going. As if it's been working at all. No, it hasn't been. In fact, there was a great video by Ben Swan the other day that showed that since the war on terror began, in fact, terror attacks in the Middle East have gone up 4,500% since the beginning of the war on terror. So no, the war on terror is not working. It's making things a lot worse. And even more ironic with the name of this group, prosperity, Americans for Peace, Prosperity, and Security. Well, prosperity, I guess, for the few contractors that are part of their lobby, because it, you know, war means poverty for the rest of all the us people that pay taxes for this shit. And then security, I mean, am I the only one that thinks that the war on terror has made us less safe? I mean, shit, how many times were we being attacked by terrorism before 9/11? And then now that 9/11 is happening, it's like, dude, the threat of terrorism is much worse than it has ever been. And so, you know, these wars overseas, there was a great article in the Anti-Media by Dan Sanchez last week as well, called Get Rid of ISIS with This One Simple Trick. And it was kind of a funny title, and it kind of played into those little infomercials and stuff. But it really showed and broke down the fact that terrorism is – the only thing that drives terrorism is foreign intervention, and it creates radicalism. And, of course, even other than that, the U.S. has been a sponsor of terrorism for a very long time, when it came to over – you know, getting rid of the Soviets and – you know, accomplishing geopolitical goals in the Middle East, like, again, trying to overthrow the Syrian government with ISIS. And then, you know, and then ISIS got out of control, just like Osama bin Laden got out of control and Al-Qaeda got out of control. At first, you know, these were vital pieces to U.S. geopolitics at one time. And then once they lose their usefulness, well, then they become useful another way, because now we have a new enemy to attack, you know what I mean? And so groups like this lobby, you know, I can't help but think that they actually enjoy terrorism. They like terrorism because if it weren't for terrorism, well, they'd have nobody to bomb, and therefore they wouldn't be making very much money, especially after the end of the Cold War and the whole, you know, the military buildup going on throughout the Cold War. I can't help but think that that was also mostly driven by propaganda, and the red threat was very much overblown and all that stuff. But that was done, I think, very much by the military-industrial complex to continue to make profits, and at the expense of the American taxpayer, unfortunately. Now, on the topic of Islam and this war against Islam that's been going on now, and of course they say it's against terrorism, and it's kind of ironic seeing Obama up there and, you know, making the case that, hey, it's not all Muslims that are bad, but at the same time, these are the same people responsible for making all this fear-mongering propaganda. You know, Obama's making us so afraid of ISIS and so afraid of the Syrian government and you know, the Libyan government and all these other things, which are many times Islamic, secular nationalist governments and things like that. Well, they paint these groups as like huge threats, and of course, you know, the average low information American is going to just assume, oh yeah, well, it's all Muslims must be bad if they have these horrible dictators and stuff, or these horrible groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. But you know, this is a big time problem that we see coming up, bubbling up all over the country now, this problem with Islamophobia and xenophobia, because you know, the fact of the matter is that you're much more likely to be killed by your TV falling on you than you are by an Islamic extremist. In fact, we had another article on the Anti-Media about 10 ways you're more likely to die than from Islamic extremism. And your TV is like way more likely. It's like 55 times more likely that you're going to die from your TV falling off the wall or falling off the TV stand and landing on you and killing you than you are from a terrorist. In fact, even lightning kills more people, many, many more people than terrorism in the United States.
I think lentil soup probably does.
Lentil soup kills probably 10 people a year, you know, and you know, I wouldn't doubt that. But Claire has this great article up today, one of my, you know, best article I've seen all month. The title is Dear America, the Terrorists Are Already Here, But They Aren't Who You Think. And the article kind of breaks down, you know, all of this uptick in xenophobia. I mean, we can look at Trump as one of the problems here. We could look at the media in general with all the fear-mongering about terrorism and all that kind of thing, which is very much misplaced. And of course, after the whole Paris attack, the media frenzy that went on after that, and again, Claire wrote an awesome article regarding that as well. But in this article, Claire, you kind of documented all these attacks that are going on in the United States right now against Muslims, because it's not that there's a bunch of Muslims out there going after Americans or you know, going after U.S. citizens or going after white people or whatever. It's actually that there's a bunch of people out there so afraid of their own shadow that they're like, you know what, like, screw it. I'm just going to go against all Muslims just because. And you kind of broke it down in your article. What can you tell us about this?
Well, I mean, it's it's insane to me that these people are so scared of Muslims that they are actually causing the terror. They have become the terrorists that they claim they fear. And there was, after 9/11, after the attacks on 9/11, 3 days afterwards, Congress authorized almost unanimously that the president basically had these broad sweeping powers to do whatever he wants to fight, you know, terrorism. And there was one person who dissented, and that was Representative Barbara J. Lee. And she said, as we act, let us not become the evil we deplore. And I really feel like we are at that spot, that point in time, where we really have become the evil we deplore. And looking at the hate crimes since the Paris attacks, but specifically also in the U.S. since the attack in San Bernardino, there are an insane amount of hate crimes. And, I mean, there are a lot of articles out there kind of listing some of the crimes that have occurred since then. But when I tried to put some of them together, I realized that a lot of the articles missed some of the other attacks. Going down, I mean, it's like every single day,
since,
it seems.
Since December 4th. Since December 4th in the United States. Now, keep in mind, today's only the 16th. There's been over 25 attacks, separate attacks, against Muslims or people that thought they were attacking Muslims in the United States.
And those are the ones that are reported, too. And we all know how that goes. You know, they could be reported differently, or people could be afraid to come forward because they don't want to have another crime happen to them, or they fear for their lives. So this is likely a very underreported statistic, too, which is really frightening.
Yeah, you know, if someone does something to your home, you don't want to speak out about it because then it gets media attention and then more people are going to come to your home and do shit, or the same person's going to come back. And this isn't even including...
A few of the people in that are listed here actually had things happen to them twice. Like, there was a Somali restaurant that was first spray-painted and vandalized with, like, Nazi propaganda and some horrible, you know, phrases and stuff, and then they came back and firebombed the place. You know, there were a couple people that were attacked twice. I mean, this is insane. One woman was just leaving a mosque, and she was driving away after going to services, and she came under gunfire from somebody who was just, you know, firing a gun at her car because she came from a mosque. There was a woman in a park who was yelling anti-Islamic slurs at a group of people who were praying and then threw hot coffee at them. There was somebody that was nearly run off the road. The thing is, people are ignorant about religions, and they see people who, they're so xenophobic, they see people who look different, and they assume things about them. And there are quite a number of people who were Sikh that have been attacked, and that's a completely different religion. The one Sikh was a store owner, and it was an armed robbery, and the guy said, I used to kill people like you in Iraq with no problem. He stuck a shotgun in the guy's mouth, made him get on his knees, and was going to kill him, went to pull the trigger, but the Sikh was actually somehow, he had his head about his shoulders, he collected himself, moved his head at the last second, so the man actually only shot out his cheek instead of shooting out his brains, which is insane. I mean, these people have done nothing. These people have done nothing to anybody. They just want to live their lives and be in peace, and these people are acting, these crazed, fearful people are acting as terrorists and, like, creating the biggest problem ever in this country.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And the sad thing is that a lot of these guys probably think they're being patriots while they're doing it. It's like, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna persecute you for your religion because of freedom. You know,
well, it's the same.
Exactly.
It's the same way that white racists during the 50s and even before thought they were being protecting the homeland against black people. I mean, it's
exactly
very direct.
Exactly
parallel.
And that is exactly
what I thought when I was writing this. I was like, wow, this is just like that period of time, particularly in the, like, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, that it was just insane, where it was almost as if crimes against African Americans were an accepted part of culture. That was how it was, and people really didn't have a problem with it in certain regions. And that's what this is starting to sound like.
Yeah, and Trump's rhetoric is kind of normalizing this kind of thing. There was another story that I wanted to bring up before the San Bernardino attacks happened, and this I also attribute at least partially to Trump's rhetoric. There was a guy, I can't remember if it was in New York, it was somewhere out there on the East Coast. There was this Ethiopian guy that got beat up. He was an Uber driver, and, you know, he gave this guy a ride, and the guy started ridiculing him, and then the guy ended up beating him up because he thought he was Muslim. The guy was Christian. You know what I'm saying? He was an Ethiopian Christian guy, and he got beat up because he kind of looked Muslim. You know what I'm saying? And like, this is textbook racism, textbook xenophobia. And to think that people are doing this out of patriotism and thinking that they're doing it for a good reason, I mean, it really is just really sickening.
It's sickening. It's absurd.
And, it's taken on a new precedent, too, because before you would have something where it was, you know, a visual cue that would tell you who the other is, and now we have an ideology under attack, which means it will only, you know, leach down and branch into new things they can persecute people for.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if you guys have noticed, but Trump, after his initial kind of commencement speech, yeah, he's still got that build the wall rhetoric and stuff, but he did move away from ridiculing Mexicans a little bit because there is a huge demographic of Mexicans out there, and many of them do vote Republican and stuff, and you know, he had to move away from that because there is a large enough contingent of Hispanics in this country that they could actually really cause pain to his campaign, but there isn't enough Muslims in the United States to actually, you know, make that kind of headway against a candidate. And so they're just the easiest target. And so Trump is really just going after the easiest target that he can find and creating a bunch of fear and a bunch of frenzy around it. And a bunch of people that are and I honestly don't think the average Trump supporter is a bad person. I don't.
Remember the Trump rally the other day, there was another Black Lives Matter activist who was beaten down to the ground, and you can hear clearly on tape somebody saying, "Burn the motherfucker alive." I mean, this is hate that's focused right now on Muslims, you know, as nebulous as that might be, but it can very easily switch and branch out and take over basically anybody who is, you know, in what it looks like, anybody who's non-white at this point.
Yeah, all them liberals out there. They're going to burn all the liberals at the stake. I mean, yeah, it's really scary. And you know what's, you know, Scott was down there. Scott is our host and a huge part of the team here at the Anti-Media. He hosts the shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays. He went to the Trump rally in Birmingham to try to, you know, get a glimpse of what it's like being in there. And he was actually there that day when that first Black Lives Matter activist got beat down. And he was telling me that while they were beating the guy down, the whole crowd started chanting, "All lives matter, all lives matter." I'm not even joking you. While they're beating this guy up, they're chanting, "All lives matter." And, you know, yeah. I guess I could just kind of leave it at that. It's just insane.
All lives except for the people they want to the people Trump wants to carpet bomb and Cruz wants to carpet bomb. I think we have to acknowledge there's just a sickness. I don't know if it's been introduced or if it's inherent, but, you know, some leftover ADD craze of manifest destiny, but there's just some kind of ignorant sickness in Americans. And I think it's specifically Americans. And boy, I don't know.
Well,
and you can bring it back to us never, ever, really, ever ending World War II. I mean, we've been under a military junta and a propaganda machine literally for 70 years.
Yeah, man, and you know, this is the conversation that we had after the last mass shooting. What was it? In fact, I think it was right after the whole San Bernardino thing. Is you got a couple of factors at play here, and this is what I was trying to get at about the Trump supporters, because I don't think that they're bad people in general. I'm sure a bunch of them are, but I don't think all of them are. I don't think the majority of them are. I think first of all, we're talking about subjects of an empire, right? These are all people. Everyone in America is a subject to the American empire. We're subject to the American public education system that more or less glorifies, you know, I guess you can call it just servant, you know, service to the state. You know, they glorify our violence. They tell us don't question the government, don't question the military. Worship the troops no matter what, regardless of what is done over there, regardless of whether they're bombing, you know, Doctors Without Border hospitals in Afghanistan, regardless, don't question it, you know. And so we're talking about a bunch of people, Americans, they're subjects to this empire, and we're indoctrinated from day one. The moment that we're old enough to start understanding language and speaking and start watching TV, you know, what do you think kids are watching? They're watching what their parents are watching. What are their parents watching? They're watching the damn debate. You know what I'm saying? So you got little three-year-old kids at home. Their parents are watching the Republican debate. And from day one, it's like, oh, yeah, we got to carpet bomb these Muslims. You know, and so from the moment that you can speak, you're already being indoctrinated by that stuff. So that's the first factor, in my opinion, what is driving all this hate and this fear. The second thing is that we can't subtract from the fact that our economy was like raided during the 2008 financial crisis. And I mean, that was just the cherry on top. I mean, it was being decimated long before that. You know, and so people are very insecure right now, economically speaking. And I know many times we make the point that a lot of the issues that we face as a society and a lot of the ills that are out there and theft and murder and all that stuff, it all stems back to like economic reasons and because people are broke, so they're out there stealing. A robbery goes wrong, you end up shooting somebody. And you know, that fuels the murder rate and all that kind of thing. Well, that also fuels this hate. You know, people are insecure about their homes. They're underwater on their mortgage. They can barely afford the bills. I mean, two-income families can't even make it anymore. Minimum wage is like, I mean, you can't even rent an apartment on your own on minimum wage at this point. You know, and so that also leads to the fear factor, and that's exactly what is so frightening right now. Is that that's the same exact recipe that led to Hitler. You know, the Weimar Republic, the failed economy, the hyperinflation that went on in Germany, which led to all these people wondering, like, well, what the hell are we going to do? You know, and they turned to a dictator because the dictator said, hey, here's the answer. You know, the Jews are the cause of this. So let's go ahead and round them up and, you know, everything's going to be good. You know, and then they kind of shield the rest of the agenda that's going on. And then, you know, that's what's going on right now, man.
Well, what they did was they equated the bankers with the Jews, just like they're equating all terrorists with all Muslims.
There are so many parallels with different problems in history right now. It's, you know, we have the parallels of the early 20th century. We have the parallels, you know, World War II and the persecution of African Americans. This prejudice and hate. All it takes for the state to do with this crazy economic, you know, scarcity that's going on right now, the state comes in, whatever politician, and takes a target and says, hate this or hate that and be divided. And they don't really have to do much because the people run with it because everybody's so desperate and so, you know, ready to do anything to make something better. And if they have a target to hate, then it's very easy for them to just, you know, get carried away, just like what is happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we talked about this last Wednesday, but I think it's worth bringing back up because, you know, if you look at the news and it's like, oh, the unemployment rate is down to 5%, the economy is recovered, everything's good again and all that. But there was a huge research paper that just came out from Pew Research Center that actually showed the middle class is now no longer the majority in the United States. And this is a huge fall from grace from just a few decades ago. And so, you know, I don't care what the news is saying about the unemployment rate. I don't care what they're saying about the economy. And of course,
Janet Yeller came out about the Fed today. That doesn't make you feel better.
Yeah. And the Fed raises interest rate today. I mean, God, the economy's on track, isn't it? But no, I mean, this is a real problem. And I think even if the poll, even if that research paper hadn't come out, I think most people in the United States kind of already feel it. And that's why, you know, there's a bunch of people that are now supporting Trump that are used to having, you know, nice American comfortable lives, middle class lives, and now they're feeling threatened because the economy was raided and we all got jacked in 2008. And of course, like I said, that was just a cherry on top. It was a long time coming. They all got jacked and now they're wondering, they're looking for somebody to blame. And you think these politicians are going to come out there and be like, you know what, blame us, we're the problem, we allowed this shit to happen, blame me, vote for me, I'm responsible for it. No, that's not what's going to happen. They're going to look for a scapegoat, and they're going to deflect from the real problem. Immigration, Muslims, refugees, all these things are actually good for the economy. I mean, they're not bad. I mean, this fear economically and blaming it on using xenophobia to kind of scapegoat is so misplaced. I mean, you're going to harm the economy. You know, Trump's proposal to ban Muslims from coming into the United States, I'd like to see the numbers that Muslim tourists bring into the United States. I guarantee you it's in the tens of billions of dollars a year. You know, everywhere I go where it's a tourist place, I see plenty of Muslim people there enjoying their, you know, enjoying their time here in San Diego on the Bayfront, walking around, supporting local businesses, you know, eating at local restaurants and that kind of thing. I mean, to ban Muslims from coming into the country. I thought this guy was supposed to be good at business. That's like a horrible decision economically. And so this is all a distraction, man. They're not addressing the real concerns here, the real economic concerns, which has to do with the concentrating wealth that's being aggregated by these idiots at the top. Or maybe they're not idiots; they're just playing us for idiots. While they concentrate the wealth, and the middle class starts to disappear, the lower class just gets poorer. And you know, the biggest thing that they can do is blame it on Muslims.
Well, not to mention that if we just stopped bombing their countries, there wouldn't be a refugee crisis. You know, the people in the upper echelons wouldn't be profiting off the contracts militarily. We could actually take that money and invest it in the country, and everything would be okay. It all comes down to this crazy belligerent, you know, for-profit scheme that's going on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, great point. I mean, we are very much responsible for the refugee crisis. I wouldn't say 100%, but we are very, very much responsible. What many people don't know, it's not just Syrian refugees. A lot of these guys are coming from Libya, you know, a country that we directly overthrew. We attempted to overthrow the Syrian government back in 2013, but the American people were like, enough is enough. We're not going to let this happen this time. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, ISIS. Okay, there's our back door. And so, you know, you got a refugee crisis coming from every country in the Middle East that we've ever intervened in. You know, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, all these places that we've had our hands getting dirty over there. Our tax dollars, you know, everyone listening to the show tonight, if you live in the United States, you've paid for some of this stuff. And, you know, I hate to say it, and I feel guilty about it every time I think about it, but, you know, we're all on the hook for this. We've all in one way or another kind of enabled it or let it happen or didn't do enough to make a stand. And I you know, as much as I'm into activism stuff, I know there's more I can do. And there's more everyone, all of us can do. I think the next big step would be a great step would be a general tax strike, you know, and to put this stuff, put a stop to this stuff. But at this point in time, it's not going to happen because fear is prevailing. You know, Trump, his numbers are surging. His numbers have gone up. I mean, yeah, Cruz is ahead of him in Iowa, but nationally, his numbers ticked up a few percentage points after he said that we should ban Muslims from coming in the country. You know, so fear is winning. Fear is selling, you know, and hopefully people listening to this radio show could help us water down a lot of this fear-mongering coming out because it's all misplaced. I mean, there is stuff to fear. We should be fearing the military-industrial complex and the actions of our own government, not Muslims that are trying to escape our policies. You know what I'm saying? And so we got to look at this stuff with reality, not just take the propaganda at face value because the propaganda is almost always bullshit. Man, there's so much more news out there today. Anyone looking for a nice long article, it's going to take you like 20 minutes, 30 maybe to read. There's an article up on the anti-media about Star Wars and the plot of Star Wars and how it relates to what's going on right now in the United States. Now, it's not about the new episode of Star Wars that just came out. It's about the past ones. But it kind of really does draw parallels between that, you know, the Emperor, the Siths, and all that crap that went on, the radicalization and how they aggregated power by creating fear and that kind of thing. Star Wars really does mirror exactly what's going on right now in the United States. And so looking at the way it turned out in Star Wars, well, you can kind of start to imagine how it's starting to look here in the U.S. as well. Now, while we're still on the topic of these so-called presidential candidates, Jake had an article that we posted today on the anti-media about Marco Rubio. And, I mean, this guy is, I mean, I don't know how much more we can talk badly about this asshole. I mean, he literally, I mean, he's a stooge for the military industrial complex. He's a stooge for mass surveillance. Now it turns out he's also a stooge for AT&T, Cox Communications, Comcast. I mean, you name it. Jake, what can you tell us about this? I hope we didn't lose Jake. Jake fell asleep at the wheel over there.
Anyway. No, sorry, my mic was off.
No worries, man.
At the core, this is a corporatist. This is just corporatist enslavement, typical. You know, one of his chief lobbyists or the guy running his campaign right now is a lobbyist for AT&T. So at its nut and bolts, it's just money. But there's much bigger ramifications here for the internet and the future of the internet. And well, the title of the article is somewhat facetious. Apparently, Marco Rubio hates high-speed internet.
that was me, by the way. I'm sorry.
I knew it was you. I know your touch. I love the title, and it's true. Except it's under the surface. It's not so much his. He probably doesn't even understand anything about broadband or anything like that. He's just basically what he did. What Rubio did is he wrote a letter to the FCC in support of AT&T, Cox Communications, Comcast, all the major telecommunication broadband providers, because there are local municipalities that are basically creating workarounds. They're bypassing these services, which, by the way, are horrible. And I think anyone can attest to that our internet speeds here and our internet connection is not only sadly monopolized, it's terribly slow and overpriced.
In the Western world, we've got like the slowest, most expensive internet, don't we?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, it's scary for the future because, I mean, the future of everything involves the internet. And so we have, Rubio, he's basically protecting the private sector, but he wrote to the FCC saying, the FCC should not be in the business of choosing winners and losers in the competitive broadband marketplace, which is incredibly ironic that he's saying that there's some kind of, unfair advantage going on when, everything he's doing is just to collect money from, his campaign donor, which is AT&T lobbyist Scott Weaver, who is part of the law firm fighting against municipal broadband.
Rubio is saying the FCC shouldn't be deciding who's going to provide internet. I should be. That's basically what he's saying there.
Right. Yes. Pretty much. Yeah. No. Good point. And additionally, it's a fight between states, agencies, and cities. States want to be able to rule that the FCC can't give rights to cities. It's really weird, but there are cities that are fighting back, so there is some hope, some room for optimism. Cities in North Carolina and Tennessee. Particularly one, and by the way, a lot of this information I was getting, from The Intercept broke this story, and it's a great, The Intercept is always just on the pulse of stuff like that. But in Chattanooga, they create, city officials set up something called the GIG, which is a municipal broadband network with a huge, very fast internet, less than $70 a month, which is a rate that's 50 times faster than the average speed American customers have through private broadband networks. So there are cities that are fighting back, and meanwhile we have these just disgustingly corporatized politicians trying to use state governments to influence the FCC to stop it. It's a sad state, but it's huge. This couldn't be more important for the future with net neutrality still kind of hanging in the balance. It's been federalized basically at this point, so it's safe for now, I guess, if you consider that safe. But the future of the internet, keep your eye on who these politicians are supporting, because a politician that's supporting big telecom is not someone you want to be voting for.
Yeah, and these municipal internet providers, they're actually kind of innovative and they're pretty cool. They're almost like co-ops in a way. They're
right,
locally owned by the taxpayers and stuff, as opposed to these privatized mega corporations that kind of have monopolized on things. And entrepreneurs have actually praised these internet hubs in these cities because it provides them with lower cost internet at higher speeds, and it's more local control over the internet. I mean, it's kind of like there was that one South Park episode where they were trying to call the the cable company, man, and it's like, well, why don't you just go to the other cable company? And the guy on the phone is like, oh, that's right, there isn't another cable company. and it's kind of one of those things, man. Anytime a monopoly is threatened, you're going to have stooges in the government that are going to go step up to bat, even though the government in theory is supposed to be anti-monopoly and supposed to be protecting the consumer and the taxpayer against monopolies. Unfortunately, government, modern times in America at least, tends to work the opposite direction, as perfect case study here with Rubio. They step up to bat in favor of monopolies and things like that and mega corporations against the interests of the taxpayer and the citizens and stuff. And so, you know, I guess the lesson here is that Rubio is just an overall shithead. You don't want to support this guy at all. I mean, he's...
That should be a title for an article. Rubio is an overall shithead.
Seriously, man. And, you know, unfortunately, this article didn't get as much traffic as it should have. But the problem is that no one gives a shit about Rubio. You know, Rubio doesn't have any support. All of his support has been manufactured by the establishment and by their media talking heads. And they're trying to create some kind of voter base for Rubio. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, the Republicans aren't going to support a Hispanic guy for office. They're just not going to. I mean, that's they're swimming upstream here, and they're going to keep pushing Rubio down our throats until the very end. But it's just not going to happen. It's not. They're not going to get the base to support this guy. You know, the base has shown who they support, and I can tell from the analytics on the website. You know, Trump is the only guy out there with legitimate, organic support from the Republican Party, and is. Frightening as that is, I mean, that's the fact of the matter. I mean, that's what the base wants. They want Trump.
I told you, man. I told you.
Yeah, and you know, Trump will hand it off to Hillary, dude. It's a scary prospect, but it could be coming.
Although, man, hey, I wanted to get this in real quick. This came out, and I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more traction. It was a Fox News, Washington Post bullshit thing, but evidently they're saying that two of the emails – we don't want to talk about your damn emails, Hillary, but evidently there are people that still want to. Apparently, they're reporting, the report is, and I'm expecting this to come out more, two of the emails that were on an unsecured private server of Hillary's were top secret. Now, that could go big. I don't give a shit regardless. I'm just reporting that there are things under the woodwork here that you can expect the GOP to throw to try and – I mean the effort to dismantle Hillary Clinton is going to be like unlike anything we've ever seen before. And with Donald Trump being, you know, Biff, you know, from Back to the Future 2 and all the money he has with the power of the GOP behind him, I mean this is going to be a witch hunt unlike anything we've ever seen before in history.
It's going to be interesting, man. This may turn out to be the most interesting election, if not the most consequential and therefore the most frightening election that we're going to see in our lifetimes. Because no one can downplay the tensions going on right now in the Middle East.
Can we hope it's going to be the worst we ever see? Please?
Because
if it gets worse than this, we're all in trouble.
No, seriously though, right? You know, the Middle East has become a powder keg. And it's just waiting for one thing can set it all off. And I was worried that the Turks shooting down that Russian jet was going to be the trigger that started it all off. Fortunately, it wasn't. But you know, who knows when the next thing is going to happen or what it's going to be where you know something triggers a major regional conflict between NATO and the East. You know, and that's not something that we want to. That's not something that we want to be thrown into, because that means that someone that you know, if not you yourself, will be drafted to go fight this war. Or, you know, if it takes longer than – if it doesn't happen in the next 5 or 10 years, well, then it's going to be more like Star Wars than we thought. It's going to be a drone war, and it's going to be androids walking around shooting people in the Middle East and in the Far East. And, you know, these are all things that are things that are on the horizon right now that we really got to – pay attention to and try to prevent. Everyone out there watching that Republican debate last night, anyone on the right wing is kind of leaning, getting pushed further and further towards not questioning the fact that, yeah, maybe we do need to start World War III. You know, maybe that is a good idea. Hopefully at least the liberals and the Democrats out there, just out of the simple fact that they hate Republicans, because we all know that they love war when it comes to Obama starting them up. You know, maybe just out of opposing Republicans, at least maybe they'll oppose these wars coming up if the next president turns out to be a Republican, you know, and that's just something I'm hoping for.
One thing you got out of that was the total, you know, basically loyalty and obedience to the military-industrial complex you get from all of the guys across the board. And it started to make me think of the U.S. as like Pac-Man. You know, he's biting the pellets, killing the ghosts, and what happens when there's no more pellets? We have to keep eating. We have to keep taking oil fields. We have to keep stealing other countries' gold and setting up central banks, because that's what we're about. We're about world domination. It's not just manifest destiny. It's the entire world. And it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. It cannot stop.
That's the best metaphor I've ever heard, DB.
So here's the thing, man. We're citizens of the greatest empire the world's ever had the unfortune to see. And we really can't be stopped unless it's by us, the people. But in order to do that, we have to tear down our own standard of living and restart our entire society. And that, to most Americans, is less palatable than this cognitive dissonance. And this is why we're seeing the apathy, because everyone knows we're the cancer of the world. No one's going to stop us but us. No military in the world's going to stop us. So that's where we're at, man. They want World War III to start, man, because we have super weapons. We're way ahead, and we'll wipe everyone out. But we need an excuse.
Yeah. I mean, great point, dude. And you know, we're seeing those days approaching, dude. And as you say, it's gotta come from within. You know, there's so many countries out there doing horrible things, and you know, Bashar al-Assad has killed hundreds of thousands of his own countrymen. You know, well, there's disputed counts there, thousands to say the least. And he's doing horrible things, but it kind of pales in comparison to the fact that the United States has military presence in over 100 different countries. Name another empire that's had a presence in 100 different countries. The British Empire was never that big. The Mongolian Empire was never that big. I mean, the Russian Empire, no. None of these empires.
We dwarf them all. I mean, think about it. If we're all connected, we're the UK, we're Canada, we're Australia, we're New Zealand. We're basically all of NATO. We're the U.S. We own Latin America. I mean, we own most of Africa. China's trying to get inside, but it's way too late. We own it all already.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I mean, we got drones still flying in Libya. We got drones flying in Somalia. Obama just sent troops into Cameroon. You know, little tiny African countries. You know, this is it may not be the textbook empire that we're so used to hearing about back in school with the British and the, you know, the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire, and you know, they all had occupying forces and they all tried to subjugate the people. This is a different type of empire, and I think a lot of it, maybe they learned from the mistakes of the Nazis and that kind of thing, where you can't go and just fully occupy and subjugate an entire population. I mean, look, we tried it with Iraq, Afghanistan, and of course it just backfires every time. That's the nature of an empire. You go invade, you try to occupy, you find yourself with guerrilla warfare resistance, and that just beats you to death. Nickel and dimes you all the way until you go completely flat broke. And so I think the U.S. kind of re-examined the definition of empire and turned it more into a corporate type of empire. And as you said, DB, getting the oil fields, establishing central banks, getting hold of the gold supplies, and establishing the petrodollar within all these countries, that's the new way of empire building, and that's what we're doing. And it may not be conventional, but I think the U.S. has become the largest empire that's ever been on the face of the earth, and they don't want to stop. As you mentioned, I mean, think about every empire, every emperor that's ever existed. What was their ultimate goal? Almost all of them eventually wanted to conquer the entire world. And at this point in time, the United States has come closer than any other empire in the history.
And that is the push for disarmament. If you want to know why, it's because when they really come out and say, hey, General McChrystal was right, we're not only going to start it with these seven countries, we're going to take it all. And nobody's going to stop us. And the only people that could have were you, but we took your guns. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, man. Great point, dude. I mean, it's tough to swallow, I guess. It's probably hard for people out there listening, especially any first-time listeners out there, to hear this stuff. But, you know, go look it up, man. Do your own research, because, you know, this is reality, and it's on us. Are we going to stop it? Or are we going to continue to allow all these people around the world to suffer? So it's not even us. It's not like the old empires where all the citizens got rich. Now we're getting bankrupted while these rich assholes make a killing, literally. So it's not even benefiting us at this point, in many ways. I mean, sure, we do have the American standard of living in that, but that's quickly eroding as well. The middle class is disappearing, dude. There's so many things going on. Thank you all for tuning in. Anti-Media Radio.
Yo, here we go through the stereo.